welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Our guest author, a great friend of the network's, Marlene Watkins, Everyday Miracles of Lourdes, 20 Extraordinary Experiences Along the Way to the Grotto, second edition by popular demand, published by EWTN Publishing, and also you can check her out on Life on the Rock. Always a pleasure to see you.
Good to see you. Always.
There's always kind of a healing effect when you're here at EWTN. And now, Everyday Miracles. Now, this is the second edition. You sold, what, 20,000 plus copies of the first edition?
Or? Yeah, what a blessing. I mean, really.
Were you surprised that it was so popular?
Yes. I think, well, not knowing how many people would be interested to read, you know, about these, because they're not official approved miracles of the church, but that doesn't make them any less miraculous to the people who experience them. But it had a great response, and we didn't really know how many Catholic books sell, you know. But I guess you were telling us that anything
10,000 is a good Catholic bestseller, and then above that you're doing pretty well. I mean, this is great. And obviously, because this is the kind of thing, I think in this, the world, especially today, I think even more so, coming out of the COVID and stuff like that, I think people's sense of looking for the supernatural, looking for healing in a world where they can't find it in the temporal world.
Yeah. And I think it touches also too. I think the one thing that all of us have in common, everybody, is suffering. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us know it in some form, either, you know, if we love, we suffer, as they say. So I think that a lot of people can identify with at least one chapter in the book, for sure, that probably touches them in some way in their own experience. And especially, like you're right, in the post-COVID world, people are more sensitive to that.
Right. And again, I think one of the great insights of Catholicism is really the idea of redemptive suffering, that suffering isn't a punishment from God because you did something wrong, and that it has a purpose and you can use it.
Yeah, and it's life-changing. Right. And we see that in the different people in the book, and they're real people, their pictures are in there, their stories are there, and it's relatable, you know, and all of them did have a life-changing experience.
Right in the front of the book, I thought it was interesting, you have the St. Bernadette's quote, "I am not made to make you believe, but to say it to you." Mm-hmm. And that was even the great book about it, to those who can believe, you know, no explanation is needed, no explanation is possible, that idea. And in some ways, it was the kind of thing that put some people off sometimes to Bernadette's holiness, because she was so direct, right?
She was. And, you know, they say that she's simple, but I think she's simple in the way that she's just not complicated. She's you're right, she's direct, but in a gracious way, I think, but in her mountain sense. She's got good practical mountain sense girl.
Right. Yeah, I think we're hopefully revisiting common sense in the world today a little bit. You say, in the spirit of St. Bernadette, you were kindly requested to pass along this book to anyone who might read it, not to try to make them believe it, but just to share this with them. Have you found that a lot of people have been passing this book along?
Yes, and we find it in interesting places. There's even people out there who are purchasing the book and leaving it at bus stations and laundromats.
Really?
And it's kind of a little secret that's going on, that we hear about it, that people are finding the book in places and you know, then reading the specific chapter, giving it to somebody else. And that's been a really beautiful, touching surprise that we didn't expect.
Right. You're saying, meet most of the people written about in this book, pictured in these chapters through episodes of My Lord's Faith Journey, the popular series filmed and produced by Our Lady of Lourdes Hospitality North American Volunteers and aired on EWTN. Of course, you can check that out and you see these stories. And you're the host of that particular program, so much so that you become a minor celebrity in your various journeys around the globe.
Well, I don't know if I'd say minor celebrity, but I do have people come up to me in airports and places. Last week, somebody said in Austria, I watch you on TV, and I recognized the accent was not Austrian. Mm-hmm. Asked where he's from, and he said he's from, he's Slovenian.
Right.
Someone in China last year told me that they watch, which really is very humbling. At Air France and in Paris, people have come up and told me, I mean, a flight attendant in tears said, I read your book, my daughter's sick, it meant so much to me, she read it in French. So, and I'm always surprised and delighted, or people will come up and say, are you really the one on TV? So EWTN is reaching so many people.
Right. In fact, this is a new edition. right?
Yes, that's the, so it's the second printing of the book in French. Right. They ran out of the first printing, and they changed the cover over to match EWTN publishing cover.
Okay, that's great. Now, one of the things you changed was you added a foreword by a cardinal we all love, of course, mm-hmm. a good friend of Mother Angelica's, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke. And he writes in the beginning here about the idea of Bernadette and a sign of certain hope and comfort. He says, in addition to the 70 official authenticated miracles of Lourdes, is it 71 now?
71 now.
Okay. There have been and continue to be what Marlene Watkins, the author of this captivating book, calls many miraculous Lourdesian events. What is that?
Yeah, so, well, you know, anybody who's been to Lourdes knows that these Lourdesian events, these things that only seem to happen in Lourdes, mm-hmm. Because, of course, official miracles are proclaimed by the Catholic Church,
right.
by a bishop, and it's the bishop where the person resides that the miracle is usually proclaimed most often, although the Bishop of Lourdes can say that this is, you know, beyond what science can explain. But these Lourdesian events are, for example, someone who, you know, is his vengeance, and they, you know, they have some really horrible plans,
right.
you know, that they're going to, and then they go to Lourdes, and it all changes. They have total forgiveness, but you can't X-ray that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't X-ray forgiveness. You can't X-ray conversion. So it doesn't qualify to be an official miracle in the church, but it's a Lourdesian miraculous
right.
event. It's a healing of the soul.
Right. Well, one of the things you mentioned in the book, which I thought was interesting in going back and looking at historical records, is because of the fact that with HIPAA and the regulation, you know, after about 7 years, we get rid of
all the records.
So it's not even the situation where one can necessarily go back and say, let's go back 25 years ago and look at this particular person when they were first diagnosed to see.
Because the documents that are needed. So we're in that situation actually in two instances right now. But when we look at Miracle 71 for the 100th anniversary of their pilgrimage that this man was on, Jack Traynor, they were missing some documents. When they were preparing for the 100th anniversary, they found the documents, submitted
another
them to the medical
miracle,
bureau.
Right?
Yes, it really is to find the paperwork.
Right.
But you know, you're right. Moving forward, anything more than 7 years. Like I said, there's two situations where that would probably halt their progress because of that.
Right, and he's the first English-speaking?
The first English-speaking miracle, so really excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where's he from?
He's from Liverpool, England.
Okay.
Yeah.
Liverpool, England. Now, at the end of this, Cardinal Burke says, he kind of does this, my thanks to Marlene Watkins and the fellow Our Lady of Lourdes Hospitality North American Volunteers. May your reading of them be occasions for the Lord to deepen your faith, embolden your hope, and fan the flames of His love within you. Was there a particular connection between you and Cardinal Burke, or between Cardinal Burke and Lourdes, that prompted you to have him do the intro?
Well, he's our cardinal protector.
I see. Okay.
So it has been, and he was in canon law school with our founding bishop.
Oh, okay.
And so back when he was Bishop Burke, and then Archbishop Burke, and then Cardinal
right.
Burke, and then of course, over the signatura. So he's been a guiding light for us all along from our very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have an interesting story. We touched on some of it in the last time, and the fact that here you are traveling the world, and at one time you had agoraphobia.
Yes.
What is that? And tell us the background of that story and how it impacts your relationship with Lourdes.
Well, for me, first of all, it's an official diagnosis that
right.
one receives, but and it's like you might know somebody who just kind of stays home and eventually they just don't venture out.
Right.
I liken it to being like a frog in water. It starts out slow for some people, but eventually it just, you're just to the point where you just don't go anywhere anymore.
Right. Just becomes too overwhelming.
Yes,
right?
And you're so isolated, and you stay inside and have your own little world.
Right.
Not because you want to, mm-hmm. but because the world around you outside has for some reason become too traumatic or difficult or complicated or painful to go out and enter. And that's what happened to me. A lot of victims of assaults and crimes find that it's just too frightening to go out, or it's so frightening to go out that you just, like for me, I just couldn't At one point, I couldn't find my own house to go home.
Really?
I was just in such a panic.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, you know, and there weren't cell phones back then.
Right.
So it took me over an hour to be able to walk into a place and say, can I use your phone,
right.
Call and have my husband come and get me. And
your handsome prince, is that how you
heard? That's what I call him, my handsome prince,
right.
50 years. And so, you know, and on the way home, I just said, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
And he understood that. So really, it was Mother Angelica who
right.
became my best friend.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yes, so in the middle of the night, Mother Angelica and I would be together, and she was in my living room. And
what's good with this, too, is that you point out, it's not the live show being on live. It's when it re-aired in the middle of the night when you reach so many people who are struggling, especially with disease and illness and pain, right?
Yes.
Because they can't sleep.
And she was just there, and I just so grateful to her, still am, always will be. And so from that, I, you know, my best friend is a business card plucked out of a fishbowl, so choose your friends wisely. Thank God for that.
And, lucky ones anyway,
yes,
right?
And, but nobody ever thought I would go. You know, my family had a pool. My son created a little pool, like, will she leave the driveway? Will she leave the house? Will she go into the airport? But I was going with my best friend, and I just felt compelled. I had been praying to see the Holy Father with my own eyes. I thought he'd come in my living room, maybe, otherwise not. And it's being with her in a place where I didn't know any people actually seemed less frightening than being, you know, out exposed at home where someone might
recognize and come approach you. Okay.
Right. And it was really miraculous that that even happened. But I still was very isolated, didn't like crowds, and was clung to my best friend. I joked that she still has the marks, you know, my fingernail imprints on her arm, clinging to her. And then we went to Lourdes, and it changed my life.
Which is also interesting because Lourdes was not your first choice, right?
No, my best friend said, let's go to Lourdes. I said, oh, I love that story with the three little kids. Well, that's,
you were talking about Fatima right now, right?
Different lady. Same lady, different dress, different country, different century, different message. But so I really didn't know much about Lourdes.
Right. So when you went there, one of the stories, you talk about a situation where you saw something that had an impact personally on your life. And a situation that happened to you that I guess impacted why you had kind of agoraphobia going on, right?
Yeah, and I had never spoken about it publicly in the 20 years. And actually, when we submitted the book was submitted by Lourdes Volunteers. They own it and receive the, they own the royalties. They receive everything from the book. I don't receive anything. It's a grace, all of it's a grace to me. So, and I had not written it publicly, but in the beginning, there was the chapter was included at the very end, but not to be published.
Oh, I see.
And somehow, when it went to the publishers, you did not have it. It was not in the original manuscript, but it went to the bishop for approval. It was in there by error, and our bishop loved it, and he said—
Not by error.
And grace, I guess.
Right,
so
right.
I was, my story actually became public, which I had never made it public.
Mm.
And that was that, you know, there were two instances where I was assaulted in my life.
Mm.
And when I went into the baths, you know, I, for those who've been into the bassines, we're so excited that more of them are opening now after COVID. There'll be 9 open this year and hopefully more the rest of them next year. But when I entered inside, it's all women in the women's baths to go in the immersion in the water, all men in the men's baths. And so there are no men there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I entered inside, I closed my eyes and was praying as they instruct you to do. And when I opened my eyes, there was a man standing there about as close as you are to me.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it was a man who had broken into the apartment where I was babysitting two little children.
You were 13
at
the time.
Right? And I was young and an innocent. And there he was standing in front of me. But I wasn't frightened. I knew who he was, but I had an overwhelming, just pouring, like gushing out of me and flowing onto him, of I wanted him to go to heaven.
Yeah, that was really
astounding,
surprising, astounding, right?
It was, and I just wanted him to go to heaven.
You would think it would be like to wish him away or something.
Yes, and
you're
right.
But not necessarily to heaven.
And I just wanted him to go to heaven, and I was so in awe of that. That as the ladies stepped me down into the steps, I just wanted him to go to heaven. And as I got really close to him, he disappeared, and I walked through him. And I'd never really had I'm not a mystical,
right,
you know,
no, I understand.
I was just so profound. And as I came back and turned around and walked out and You know, as I knelt down and prayed, I was just in awe of that. And as I knelt down to pray, I kissed the ground, like that's what they do when they volunteer and help. That's how I wound up being in there. And just pulled from the queue another grace. And then when my lips, you know, touched the floor, I promised Our Lady I would come back with 10 good Catholic American women to help. And
because the women there are not paid employees, they're all volunteers.
I thought they were all employees, but they're not. They're people like you and me who take their vacation, pay their own way, go over, and for an entire week, selflessly, just help the sick and the suffering. And so it was life-changing for me. But, you know, and here we are. Now it's in a book, and all these other people coming, and just what a grace.
You also talk about shaking and what that seems to represent, at least some of the volunteers indicated.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because someone else approached me and said, I had that experience happen to me when my life was changed in the baths, but I just thought it was me. I didn't know what happened to other people. And I had had the privilege bathing women, that there was a woman we had who was shaking, trembling so bad we could hardly get her into the baths. It took two people to try to help me just stabilize me. I was shaking so bad. And the woman said, oh, there's a conversion or a grace or a healing gonna happen. And the woman kept saying to me that she was dying, and she said, but I feel warm and I'm not in pain. Something has happened to me. But I just always wondered, whatever happened to her, I don't know. But so that does happen. But of the thousands of women I've had the privilege to bathe over all these years, I've only seen that twice.
Really? Okay. So it wasn't because the water's always cold, and so
everybody starts shouting
because it's cold, right? So,
although there's a rare people who say it's warm.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's something's happening there.
Yes.
The grace is there. What is the Lambertini criteria?
Well, you know, that's set by the Catholic Church. It's what they use in the process of sanctity to proclaim someone publicly a saint. They have to have two miracles attributed to their intercession, their heavenly intercession. And so that criteria is that it has to be a very serious illness, a diagnosis that has been proclaimed, that is a diagnosis that has been made scientifically. It has to be a sudden and instantaneous and complete total cure that could not have happened on its own, that's not explained. So it has to be a serious disease that is, you know, with a serious prognosis in its worst condition.
Right. In the book you say, only an infinite God can perform miracles. We limited human beings cannot. God performs miracles for our salvation so that we will know He is who He is. And you also talk about His Father John, our own Father John Paul.
Yes.
Reminds us God is God and we are just us. Now we get a lot of people contacting. Now my question for you is, do you get a lot of people contacting you about personal miracles?
Yes. So there are people who want to share their story. They want other people to know. Or they've never told anybody because they didn't think anybody would necessarily believe them. But they would like to share it and say, God is awesome, He is real. Miracles are still happening. It's not just in the Gospels. It's not like the Gospels happened and the story is over. That's how we're all here, you know, in our faith. So there are a lot of people who've had extraordinary miraculous intervention. It's where the hand of God intervened for them. And their physical cures, their mental, emotional, and of course mental can't be x-rayed, emotional
spiritual,
can't be.
Right.
Yes, spiritual can't be, but they are nonetheless life-changing.
Well, what's a backdoor miracle? Is that an example of a backdoor miracle?
Well, you know, the second chapter in the book, all the medication is lost. So there's go to the pharmacy, get all this medication, and upon returning back, the pharmacist is shocked and alarmed and said, this was the wrong dosage, and if you had taken it, it would have killed you.
Oh, wow.
So how shocking that is. So we say, well, you know, that's a backdoor miracle of Lourdes. Our Lady allowed, you know, somehow for all of that, you know, medicine bag to be lost. And ultimately, you know, so those are the lots of the little small things that happen all the time.
Well, you talk about the idea that you believe that in some ways Lourdes is more relevant today than ever before. And the other thing that's interesting, especially for our non-Catholic friends, but they say, well, Catholics focus on Mary all over the place. You got Marian apparitions, Marian devotions. But you make the point that this, the Lourdes is really Christocentric and Eucharistic.
Yes. Absolutely. And Lourdes is a Christ-centered, you know, Christocentric shrine. When you come inside the gate, the first thing you see, of course, is Jesus Christ on the cross. It's not a statue of Our Lady. It is Christ, because that's what she's always doing, is bringing us to Christ. Mm-hmm. That's what she does in the Gospels, and that's what she's doing now.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that there's a couple of, St. Bernard said, under Mary's protection, you have nothing to fear, and a couple of the miracles, I'd be interested, maybe you could comment on those. You talk about a remarkable miracle of the time-suspending, life-saving rosary.
Oh, that's Cora, and a chapter in the book. She's wonderful. She spoke in San Francisco. We had a book talk in San Francisco, and she was stung by a bee right in the throat, and allergic to bee stings, but didn't know it. And it's actually, it doesn't say it in the book, but it's EWTN that's playing on her TV, and she knows what time Mass is on, she knows what time all the shows are on, so she knows what time it was when she came into the house. She was pruning her roses, stung by the bee. She said, I felt, something wrong, really wrong, but she didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. She came in, she looked at the television, and then she dropped to the floor, and, she had said at the gym early in the morning, that God can take her at any time. Her bags are packed. She's getting ready to go to France. And her friend was, somewhat mocking that and made some comments about it. And she said, well, I'm ready to go. God can take me at any time. She said, but when I laid on the floor and she said, I knew something was terribly wrong, I said, I didn't mean that. I need to be here. I need to pray for my son to come home from his deployment. I'm not ready to go, Blessed Mother. Please help me. Please help me. She started praying the rosary. Mm-hmm. She had her beads in her hands, laying on the floor. And she estimates it took her about 4.5 hours to pray one rosary, which really it's maybe 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And she said she doesn't know why it took so long, but it was as if time was suspended. And when the ambulance came, she was blue. As she was finishing her rosary, and it's just unexplainable. She was in a coma. She was in a coma for days, and time was suspended, and she somehow, and in that experience, though, she said she didn't know she was in a ICU bed in California. Mm-hmm. She was in Lourdes at the Eucharistic procession. And she said she was watching from above, and it was a beautiful view. And she said
it was almost like an out-of-body experience.
Oh yes. And she said, I didn't know that I was back there in that bed. And she said, I thought, this is it. This is, if you want to know how to go to heaven, this is the way to heaven. So she knew it was something heavenly that was happening to her. Mm-hmm. And she said, we just have to follow Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. So.
Right. Interesting in that case, because you started out that way and to say, no, need to stay. But do you think one of the great miracles of Lourdes for people who are ill or terminally ill, who let's say don't have a physical cure, that there's a greater acceptance of what they're dealing with and maybe that they're ready to go, so to speak?
Well, none of us are getting out of this lifetime alive, right? Every one of us is going to have our terminal time.
Right. And even if we're healed.
That's right. Even those who are... even
Father Groeschel used to say, even if you're healed.
That's right.
It's only temporary, technically.
That's right. Because, it's like the body's like the banana peel. It's the banana. It's the real fruit is the soul. Mm. And so a lot of people in reading this realizing that it is the state of the soul. Mm-hmm. That is the most important. So having that healing, and anyone who experiences a miracle, like a healing of the body, they're also healed in their soul. And that's really critical to those 71 miracles, is that it didn't just heal their body and the soul wasn't impacted. Right. It was an entire healing of body and soul.
Now you also talk about the unexpected way the oldest pilgrim and her marriage were renewed at Lourdes.
She was an incredible lady. And it's interesting that, so she actually was dehydrated and had been hospitalized for that. Without our understanding of that from her husband, she was not an English speaker. They live in Florida, but he spoke some English. And she just had refused to eat and drink. And what had happened, we discovered it unfolded on the pilgrimage, is that she began to fear that she would outlive her husband. Mm-hmm. She was 98, turning 99, and she began to worry that she would live and he would die. He was a few years younger than her, also in his 90s. So she just started to change what she was doing. She stopped eating, she stopped drinking, and it was really like a will to die.
Right.
And being a Spanish speaker, we asked for a priest to come in and bless her, and our medical team was in there to evaluate her. Mm-hmm. And the first priest came in and offered to give her blessing, and she threw him out of the room. And her husband said, every unkind thing she said about him, he would say a beautiful thing about her. And so she threw the priest out of the room. The second priest came, she wouldn't even let him in the door. Mm-hmm. She threw him out. And then the third priest who came in, his beautiful voice, and he came in making the sign of the cross, the large, you know, beautiful sign of the cross, singing in Latin, and came over and kissed her hand as they're about to put an IV. And as he kissed her hand, he made the sign of the cross over her hand. Mm-hmm. And as he did that, she said, yes, she would like the anointing, and she would go to confession. And then she even joked and said, my husband can tell you all my sins, he knows them, because you don't speak Spanish. But of course, we called the Spanish priest back in. But I asked Father afterwards, when you made that sign of the cross, I said, I felt like you cut through something. And he said, he sensed it too.
Some block or something.
It was a spiritual battle she was in. It wasn't just a physical battle. She started eating, lived in the grace, and you know, died not long after that, and a holy death. And we're just really grateful for that. That's something extraordinary.
Right. Yeah. Well, everything about this book is extraordinary. All the work of the Lord's volunteers is extraordinary, obviously. Why don't you give us your web address so people want to find out more about
Lord's Volunteers. Sure. So it's volunteers. Two words, Lord's, but it's LOURDES, volunteers with an S at the end, .org, O-R-G. So it's lordsvolunteers.org.
Okay, great. Are you writing on any other books or just going to be promoting the second edition?
Well, there are four chapters of book number two, which would be Everyday Miracles of Lord's Volunteers. So it would be a continuation of very similar stories, but with a little bit different look.
Yeah, well, hopefully there'll be 72 and 73. We'll never know in the next book. Thanks, Marlene. Always
Thank
a
you.
Pleasure to talk to you. Everyday Miracles of Lord's, 20 Extraordinary Experiences Along the Way to the Grotto. Amazing Stories, second edition, proudly published by EWTN Publishing, available naturally through our EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time, right here on EWTN's Bookmark.